from deep inside your radio.
From the Louisiana Le Show Dome, ladies and gentlemen. And you know, when people find out that I live here in New Orleans part-time, the first thing they always say, even before why, is how are things down there? So here's my answer to how are things down there right now, as of the middle, just past the Ides of November, I guess. Well, it's summer, it's fall, it's summer, it's fall. You're turning on the heat, you're turning on the air conditioning, you're opening the windows, you're closing the windows. This is, I think, the first time since the disaster that there have been two large conventions back-to-back, which is an odd position for conventioneers, if you've ever. This week, the League of Cities came here, and Mayor Michael Bloomberg of New York made an address to the assembled mayors, city managers, and so forth, in which he said, well, you know, recovery doesn't just happen. It needs strong leadership from the mayor. It was not, he said, a slam at, you know, any mayor of any particular city who, in whose convention center the event might have been taking place. And I have to say, despite all the shots being taken at the mayor of New Orleans, I, for one, am grateful that he keeps his wife and children in Houston, Texas, so that when he's out of town, at least some of the time, we know where he is. How are things? The Army Corps of Engineers has just announced it's going to close the Mississippi River Gulf Outlet. This is the 45-46-year-old canal the Corps dug to make a direct link between the Gulf of Mexico and the Mississippi River, despite warnings from ecologists and others that it would just drive the storm surge from any large storm straight to the heart of New Orleans, which it did. Here is, however, you know, don't blame the people in the Corps necessarily, because they're working under some weird rules. According to district commander of the Corps, reviewers of the decision to shut down the outlet, which was responsible for the flooding of part of the Lower Ninth Ward and all of St. Bernard Parish, which lost 99% of its housing, ladies and gentlemen, even though it didn't make it onto TV. Reviewers of the decision had questioned whether the deauthorization of the outlet for navigation purposes met the Army Corps of Engineers' National Economic Development Standard, which requires financial benefits to outweigh costs. Of course, they can't take into account little things like homes destroyed, people killed in making that determination. No, the explanation was merely that the cost of dredging to keep the outlet open far outweighed the economic benefits to port and barge owners. You know, as far as homes and people and things like that, they can't really, it's not really in their calculation. FEMA, on the other hand, wasted about $30 million last year in maintaining trailers for Katrina survivors next door in Mississippi, according to a new government report. By not awarding work to contractors with the lowest bids, FEMA misspent $16 million, says the Government Accountability Office. It also misspent an additional $15 million on inspections it couldn't prove were performed, preventive maintenance for which contractors falsified documents, and emergency repairs on trailers that FEMA did not own. Over 2 years have passed, says the GAO, and FEMA is still wasting tens of millions of taxpayer dollars as a result of poor management and ineffective controls. In what some see as another bureaucratic absurdity, FEMA is refusing to pick up the cost of restocking New Orleans Aquarium because the fish were obtained straight from the sea. FEMA would have been willing to pay more than $600,000 for the fish if it had been bought from commercial suppliers. But the agency balks because the Audubon Aquarium went out and replaced the fish that died when the place flooded and the power went out. They replaced them the old-fashioned way with hooks and nets. That expedition saved the taxpayers $500,000, but did not comply with FEMA regulations. FEMA regulations, well, some of them require homeowners to do something before they can get reimbursed by FEMA. Some of them require homeowners not to do something in order to get reimbursed by FEMA. So if you elevated your house, as they told you to do, before FEMA cut you a check, you're not eligible for reimbursement. If you did repairs on your rental property before getting a check from FEMA, you're okay. How are things in New Orleans? You figure it out. Hello, welcome to the show.
Blue Monday, I hate Blue Monday. Got to work like a slave all day. Oh, Tuesday, here come Tuesday. I'm so tired, ain't got no time to play. Wednesday cold, and I beat to my socks. My girl called, got to tell her that I'm out. This Thursday, it's a hard working day. And Friday, I get my pay. Saturday morning, all my tiredness is gone away. With my honey and my money, and I'm out on the town to play. Sunday morning, my head is bad, but it's worth it for the time that I've had. Now I've got to get my rest, 'cause Monday's a mess.
From the shores of Lake Pontchartrain, Louisiana, I'm Harry Scherer. Welcome you to this edition of the show. And I can explain the last thing I said more clearly. If you're elevating your house, you have to... no, I can't explain it more clearly. That's the whole trick. I'll think about this. I have paperwork here. Ladies and gentlemen, Annals of Competence, former GOP leadership aide in the House of Representatives, Manuel Miranda, has a new job. He's director of Office of Legislative Statecraft at the U.S. Embassy in Iraq. There he's giving instruction on democratic principles to Iraqi lawyers and legislators. He honed his own legislative statecraft at the Senate Judiciary Committee a few years ago, where he led an 18-month effort, according to the Washington Post, to pilfer documents from the opposition staff. He was forced from his job in early 2004 after an internal Senate investigation determined he and an aide had swiped more than 4,500 documents, memos, and emails. He acknowledged doing so later because the committee had no internal password protection at the time. And Bernard Kerik, former New York City police chief, former business partner of Rudy Giuliani, almost, and I said last week in error, first Secretary of Department of Homeland Security, he would have been the second had he been confirmed, but he wasn't, now has a legal defense fund. Item two in the frequently asked questions, how will the funds that I contribute to the Bernie Kerik Legal Defense Fund be used? Answer, quote, any contribution you make will be treated as a gift to Mr. Kerik to be used at his discretion, unquote. I am so in. Let me see now. If you elevated your house, without waiting for the check, you don't get reimbursed. But if you are a landlord and need to rebuild your rental housing unit, I give up. Now, ladies and gentlemen, news of the warm. And that's me. I graduated and everything.
Soft, listen to the warm.
Suffice to say, it's one way for one thing and the other way for the other. Oh, so much news of the warm this week, ladies and gentlemen. You know about the International Panel on Climate Change, which came out with its final report this week, ending a six-year review of the scientific evidence on climate change. But it may be even worse than the IPCC indicated, because they considered only work published up to last year and have ignored several alarming recent studies, such as research that suggests the Southern Ocean and rainforests are soaking up less carbon dioxide than before. On that point, the IPCC report, according to the Independent newspaper, highlights the little-known acidification of the oceans. Emissions of carbon dioxide have already increased the acidity of ocean surface water by 30%, threatened to treble it by the end of the century, says the executive director of the United Nations Environment Program. The report has put a spotlight on the threat to the marine environment that the world has hardly yet realized. The threat is immense, as it can fundamentally alter the life of the seas, reducing the productivity of the oceans, as well as reinforcing global warming, unquote. The seas have already absorbed about half of all the carbon dioxide emitted by humanity since the start of the Industrial Revolution, just 500 billion tons of it. This has, in fact, slowed global warming up to now, but at an increasingly severe cost. The gas dissolves in the oceans to make carbonic acid, which is increasingly souring the naturally alkali seawater. This mops up calcium carbonate, which is normally plentiful in the seas, which corals use to build their reefs and marine creatures use to make their shells. These include many of the plankton that form the base of the food chain. As the waters grow more acid, the process is decreasing with incalculable consequences for the life of the seas and for the fisheries that depend on them. Every species that uses calcium this way that has so far been studied has been found to be affected negatively, and the seas are most acid near the surface where most of their life is concentrated. According to the Royal Society, the world's oceans are probably now more acidic than they have ever been in hundreds of millennia. Even if emissions stopped now, the waters would take tens of thousands of years to return to normal, whatever normal is. If warming continues to the levels predicted by this week's IPCC report, the seas will reach a condition unprecedented in the last 20 million years. Something similar happened when a comet hit Mexico's Yucatan 65 million years ago, blasting massive amounts of calcium sulfate into the atmosphere to form sulfuric acid. Maybe I'll stay in today. Which in turn caused the extinction of corals and virtually all shell-building species. 2 million years went by before corals reappeared. It took a further 20 million years before the diversity of species that use calcium returned to its former levels. Memo to shellfish, take calcium supplements. A United States scientist studying the dramatic change in ice conditions in British Columbia's mountains has discovered freshly exposed and perfectly preserved tree stumps, some 7,000 years old, an astonishing sign of how fast and how far the glaciers of Western Canada are retreating. The stumps were still rooted to their original soil, and in such pristine condition some had retained their bark. They're relics of an ancient forest that was growing when humans were still relatively new arrivals in the Americas. Glacier overran the trees and encased their dead remains in an icy tomb, eventually hundreds of meters in depth. How deep is that? I have a friend who knows. The glacier would have advanced and retreated many times over the ensuing 7,000 years, but never had historical warming cycles ever shrunk the glacier enough to release the trunks from their deep freeze till now. Climate change could put an end to globalization by 2040, predicts a group of security experts. They say as global warming intensifies, nations will abandon the drive towards ending trade barriers and opening borders. Instead, they will look inward to conserve scarce resources, and conflicts will flare as refugees flee rising seas and drought. That would end the immigration debate. From Australia, an independent climate change report has found pollution's impact on global warming is worse than previously predicted. The University of Melbourne study found temperature rises and ice cap melting are occurring faster than the worst-case scenarios predicted by the UN. When the world's experts on global warming gather in Spain next week, they won't have to travel far to witness the impact of rising temperatures. The meeting Monday unfolds in the Mediterranean port city of Valencia, which is cowering at the prospect of desertification. No, doesn't mean more desert. Most of Spain suffers dry spells, but in key regions, aridity has become chronic, driven by human development and changing rainfall patterns, and worse is likely to come. Around a seventh of Spain is at high risk of desertification. And from the New Scientist, spring is happening later across the southern U.S. It's really surprising, says a researcher at Earth Resources Technology in Maryland, because studies usually show plants greening earlier. Nobody had noticed how warming temperatures can delay the green up. Some plants, this researcher theorizes, need to be exposed to a short cold snap to sprout. Plants at northern latitudes still get this, but those below 35 degrees north do not, causing them to sprout later as the climate warms. Almost as paradoxical as FEMA's regulations. Not quite. Almost. News from the... News from the Warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And how's the war on drugs going? Well, you know, for years, a favorable exchange rate, one American dollar buying one and a half Canadian dollars, made drug smuggling across the Canadian border profitable. Last month, for the first time in more than 30 years, the two currencies are at par. Today, a Canadian dollar buys $1.10 U.S. That's just silly. So global economics have done what U.S. law enforcement could not. It's far more expensive to buy Canadian exports, legal or otherwise, and smuggling profits are disappearing. Canadian marijuana production costs are met in Canadian dollars, and those are worth more now. So watch for the reduction of Canadian pot. How's Pakistan doing? President Musharraf now says he's the only guy who can keep Pakistan's nukes safe. Wasn't there a phrase back in the Cold War days called nuclear blackmail? He has restored several private television channels that he had taken off the air. Dozens of others remain off the air because the employees have refused to sign a new code of conduct for the media introduced by President General Musharraf. Why would you refuse to sign that? The code threatens journalists with jail if their coverage ridicules the president or other government officials, including the largest private television network has been shut down because they refused to sign the code of conduct. I think that makes him look silly, as well as way too short. Says a former CIA official, the United States is now confronted with an essentially no-win situation in Pakistan, the result of many years of ad hoc policies based on an abiding faith in the power of U.S. military force, coupled with ignorance of the strategic, cultural, and psychological realities of the region. This is according to Graham Fuller, former vice chairman of the National Intelligence Council at the CIA. He says, at heart, U.S. strategic interests and those of Pakistan don't mix, don't coincide, particularly as perceived by Pakistan's strategic elite. Washington wants what Pakistan will not deliver or cannot deliver destroying Al-Qaeda, because Osama bin Laden is still the object of sympathy by huge numbers in Pakistan. Washington wants Pakistan to cut off cross-border contact between Pakistan and Afghanistan. Musharraf and his generals will pay lip service to this goal, according to Graham Fuller, but they won't ultimately do it because there are twice as many ethnic Pashtuns in Pakistan itself as there are in Afghanistan. The cross-border ties are inextricable. Clan, family, history, culture, language, blah, blah, blah. See? Ignorance. That's all. It's just ignorance. It's all it takes to get us into a mess like this. News of the Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen. State Department Inspector General Howard Krongard said he will no longer participate in his high-profile probe or any high-profile probe of Blackwater and of the State Department's troubled construction of the new U.S. Embassy in Baghdad after a House committee confronted him with evidence of conflict of interest, chief one being his brother's role as a member of the board of Blackwater.
Sunday morning, the coffee's on. That gray cat's still yawning because Saturday is gone. And I still feel the feeling of how you felt upon me. And it may be no big deal to you, but it's a very big deal to me. Down and dirty, he was tall and 29, and I'm only disconcerted because you said you knew I wouldn't mind. But I still feel the feeling of how you telephone me, and it may be no a very big deal to me. But you can't make a cool cat crazy like you can't make a gray cat brown, and you can't keep a wild cat when she knows the wildest cats in town. And so it's Sunday morning, yeah, I guess I had it coming. Ooh, 'cause I start recalling time I went astray. I still feel the feeling her last words of warning. She said, man, it may be no big deal to you, but it's a very big deal to me. She said, man, it may be no big deal to you, but it's a very
this is Le Show. Most of the news that I've seen this week since Thursday, well, a lot of it was build up, but since Thursday has been focusing, obsessing, I'd say, on the Democratic presidential debate in Las Vegas, Nevada. And how cool that was that the Democrats debated in Vegas. You know? It just made the commute to the hookers so much quicker. But the, you know, the focus of, as a mark of how well the journalism fraternity has learned its lesson, you know, they have these fora and symposia after every presidential election and vow to do better. You're not going to get hung up in that horse race thing. And then, of course, every presidential election, immediately they get hung up in that horse race thing because the main sources for political journalists are political consultants. And they're hung up in the horse race thing. So there you go. But it was an interesting debate. And the crowd played a part in it. I guess the rules were that the crowd could make noise this time around. And there was no clock, per se, or any sound effect to indicate when the candidates had to finish talking. All there was moderator Wolf Blitzer, who seemed at so many moments during the debate to like what he heard.
In biodiesel, in clean coal technology, and in superior nuclear technology.
All right.
I reject the notion that we can't meet our energy challenges.
All right.
We
mandate.
All right.
And my point is simply that people have...
All right.
We need to put forth a positive agenda for America.
All right.
I was passing the crime
All
bill.
Right.
So that it's no longer rigged, corrupt, and
All right.
rigged against the interests
All right.
of the American people. When is our party
All right.
going to show a little backbone and strength
All right.
and courage and speak up
All right.
for those people who have been left behind?
All right.
Then we lose the American people.
All right.
So that's what I intend to do as President of the United States.
All right.
Driver's licenses are the wrong thing to be doing in terms of attracting people to come here.
All right.
33% of all New Mexicans were uninsured. Today it's
All
11%.
Right.
It's a matter of public
All
safety.
Right.
Secure the borders. A stronger relationship
All right.
with Mexico, those that knowingly hire illegal workers.
All right.
I remember where I came from.
All right.
We need to have a collegial collaboration, and the teachers need to be at the table.
All right.
You have to, look, the
All
idea
right.
you start that make a difference in the lives of ordinary people over there and not be
All
doing
right.
it through the military side.
But
All
here's
right.
another point. No, but here's another point. Our strength is not just military and economic.
All
Our
right.
strength as a nation is our values. Equality,
right.
freedom, democracy.
Right.
It is the only
right.
way.
That's not a great outcome for us at this point.
All right.
Contributing to the reconstruction of Iraq, where we have spent...
All right.
We're back to where we started back in 2006.
All right.
The big corporations right. in America, it's wrong to not hold them responsible for their obligations.
All right.
It should have stopped right then and there.
All right.
She stood in the street, smiling from her head to her feet. I said, hey, what's this? Maybe, baby, she's in need of a kiss. I said, hey, hey, what's your name, baby? Maybe we can see things the same. Now don't you wait. Let's move before they raise the parking rate. All right now.
So here it is. If you're a small landlord, you know, smaller than Pervez Musharraf. Oh, I ridiculed him. I'm off to jail. You have to do all your repairs with incredible, impeccable documentation before FEMA will reimburse you. If you elevated your house and you didn't wait for FEMA's check to do it before you started, they will not reimburse you. I think that's okay. Everybody clear on that? That's life with FEMA. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's just time for me to read the trades for you is all. Attention, striking Hollywood union members, and any who may be striking in the future. From the ABA Journal, Journal of the American Bar Association, Hollywood outsourcing higher-end legal work to India. I'll read it for you. Even with the millions that a successful movie can make, this is the ABA Journal, they don't know how. They haven't checked with their brothers at the American Accounting Association lately. Continuing, Hollywood producers are watching their legal costs. So instead of having high-priced U.S. law firms handle all of their entertainment matters, some reportedly are starting to send some relatively high-end legal work to attorneys in India. While outsourcing back office work such as document reviews is fairly commonplace today, Indian lawyers working on planned Hollywood productions are conducting legal research, writing legal opinions, drafting motions and copyright clauses, preparing documents for insurance coverage, and processing visas for Hollywood actors, producers, and directors. This is according to the Times of India. That's right, the ABA Journal outsourced their reporting to the... Such work is being handled, for example, by Mysore. It's the name of a city, please. Based SDD Global, a 40 attorney law process outsourcing firm. Getting all those legal requirements done in the U.S. can be terribly expensive, considering lawyers have to be paid between $450 and $650 an hour. Well, they don't have to be paid that, but that's what they're saying. But attorney Sajai Singh tells the newspaper in India the same kind of work would be paid at the rate of $60 to $100 per hour. Production houses using the outsourced legal services include 20th Century Fox. Well, they wouldn't do anything bad. Sony and Universal. Ditto. Says Russell Smith, president of SDD Global. We just signed to work on 3 global movie releases. We can't reveal the names now. We will handle pre- and post-production legal issues, said Smith, who is a U.S. licensed attorney and litigator. Look for him in court. SDD Global was recently chosen as a legal navigator for Virulence, a movie venture between New Regency Productions and Virgin Comics. Virgin Comics, yeah, it's a partnership between Richard Branson and Deepak Chopra. The movie will be distributed by Fox. Sony Pictures is said to have tied up with SDD Global for a politically tinged comedy involving leading Hollywood actors. Out in the first half of next year. Quote, the film involves dozens of complicated legal issues and our attorneys have logged 400 hours dealing with those. The movie got its final go-ahead only after we charted ways the film could be made with a minimum of lawsuits, said one of the Mysore attorneys. SDD Global is preparing legal documents to rebut a controversial defamation action against HBO's The Ali G Show. The plaintiff has sued HBO, taking objections to, quote, funny, unquote, statements made by the fictional buffoon Ali G. Says the Mysore attorney, our attorneys are preparing a motion arguing that no reasonable person could take outlandish jokes of a fictional TV character seriously. Unless it's President Musharraf. This globalization thing's coming to an end, but it's fun while it lasts. A thought that occurs to me when I read the trades for you, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Back to the Democratic presidential debate in Vegas. One of the controversies that's swirled around it was whether Hillary Clinton would recover from her, what the pundits had agreed was a subpar performance in the previous debate 2 weeks ago. Yes, they're having him every 2 weeks. What's your problem? And another post-debate controversy was over the fact that CNN had, of course, a panel of pundits after the debate to evaluate the performance of the candidates, horse race-wise. And one of them was James Carville, whom Anderson Cooper, the host, identified as a former aide to President Bill Clinton. Didn't mention that he's involved, Carville now says, as a friend and maxed out contributor, as well as an unofficial advisor who doesn't take a nickel. Of course not. He gives. He doesn't take. To the Hillary Clinton campaign, CNN's chief, Jonathan Klein, said he thought that the disclosure was inadequate and was going to do more in the future. And of course, the Clinton campaign continues to release on YouTube and elsewhere amusing campaign commercials featuring self-deprecatory episodes with former President Clinton in cute situations. It all sounds like another episode of Clinton Something next here on the show.
Something. The campaigning years.
And action. And Mr. President, you're mopping the floor. Good. And you stop and wipe your brow. Good. And now you hear the phone ring and you put the mop down, right? And you trip on it as you go for the phone. Lovely, lovely. And now you get to the phone and...
Yes, dear. Yes, dear. Yes, dear. Bye.
And you hang up and you look at us and...
Man, you'd think by now I should assume I already knew a website address for donations.
And cut. That's lovely, Mr. President. What was that one again, Monisha?
That was take 35.
Okay, I thought the tripping over the mop worked much better with it placed with the head going the other way.
Oh, no question. I feel stupid. I didn't think of it till take 33, but hey.
Yeah, look, I know this isn't your bailiwick, Jeffrey, but I mean, maybe the reason this is taking so long is that I'm just not all that comfortable with the script.
You know what? Let's take a five.
That's a five, people.
Look, Mr. President, I know the last line is wordy. We had the boys working on it all morning.
Well, why don't we just fly Al Franken in? He could have this thing whipped in just a few hours.
Manisha, this is above my pay grade.
His people say he's tied up with his own campaign and he's not going to be as available to us this cycle.
All right, well, that's fair enough, but...
Mr. President, can I just talk to you director to actor for just a minute?
You sure you don't want to talk director to sax player? Sure, go ahead.
these pieces have been great, sir. Great YouTube numbers, great follow-up media attention. Yeah. I mean, slam dunk, slam dunk, slam dunk. At this point, I think we could just kind of relax into this one a little bit more. Have confidence in the material.
Look, Jeff, I have no trouble playing the subservient first husband for laughs. I mean, I actually sat in on some of the earlier writing sessions. I guess they kicked me out for this one.
Oh.
It just seems, I don't know, a little too fake, a little over-exaggerated, a little too on the nose. That is what you folks call it, right? On the nose?
Oh, absolutely, sir. That's what we call it. You mean the cleaning, the tripping, the yes, dears? What is it that particularly sets off alarm bells? I'm sure we could get the boys to get a little off the nose, if you will.
It's the whole thing, Jeffrey, the whole mishpuka. That is what you folks call it?
Absolutely. Look, obviously, sir, I don't have the authority to...
No, I know it, man. I hate to pull your chain on this thing, but...
I mean, I'm just trying to bring this in before we get into lunch penalty, you know?
I know it. Look, let me just tackle this one head on. Maybe you want to...
That's a 10, folks.
It's a 10, everybody.
I'll just go into my trailer and make this call.
Yes, sir, and I'll just read the trades right here until you come back.
Cool.
Then he said that he agreed that the disclosure of my involvement in your campaign was probably insufficient.
And then what did you say?
I said, look, Anderson, I'm sorry that they took you to the woodshed for the whooping. And then he says, you know, I'm a big boy, I don't mind that. And I said, yeah, but aside from being a maxed out contributor and a close friend of the candidate, I have no involvement in Hillary's campaign.
And? Sorry, Hillary, it's the red phone. Well, tell whoever it is to wait. It's your husband? Tell whoever it is to wait. You got it. Look, James, you're far more valuable to me as a trusted advisor than as a TV pundit, so if there's any problem...
The problem, Hillary, is that I'm far more valuable to my family as a TV pundit. You know, being your close friend doesn't jack up my speaking fees until after you've been elected.
Well, I'd think Mary would be jacking up your fees, James, having just come out of Dick Cheney's office.
Yeah, if she were free to say anything about it. They got her signature on a non-disclosure agreement that would make Bill Gates blush. Look, let's just agree on what it is we want CNN to say next time I come on to say what a good job you did in the debate. And
James Carville is the man who gave Hillary Clinton this snappy comeback in minute 3 that got a big laugh and shut up Obama. Is that what you want, James? I mean, come on. If they did full disclosure on everybody who's a pundit on these debates, it'd take so long there'd be no time for the spin.
You know, that word spin has gotten such a bad rap since it went public. I'm calling it marinade now, you know, because we just soften up and flavor up what happened.
Well, I just don't think we send you out there with a big sign around your neck that says Hillary's guy.
No, I don't either. But you know, maybe something like James Carville is married to a right-winger but has better sense than to listen to his wife.
I don't want to keep Bill waiting any longer, James. See if you can come up with something a little less insulting to my base, okay?
Okay, Hillary.
Hello.
Hey, hon, if I'd heard that Celine Dion song on hold about 10 more seconds, I'd have...
You'd have hung on for another 10 minutes. Hello, darling. How's filming going?
Well...
We got another masterpiece in ex-presidential self-deprecation in the can?
Yes, dear, but...
I hope so, because the webmaster needs to put it up tonight. We're already getting slammed in the blogs for keeping the old one up so long.
Yes, dear. It's just...
And look, I know you probably think these things are maybe getting a little heavy-handed, but... Stan says they poll right off the charts, and Al Franken worked on this latest one all night until he had to go campaign in Mankato.
Yes, dear. But...
Hon?
Yeah?
I don't think we want to go messing with the terms of our arrangement right at this particular time. Do we? I didn't think so. Let me see the selected takes.
Yes, dear.
Mr. President, we good?
Jeffrey, we're so good it hurts.
Youthful angst and middle-aged drive for power. Together, they add up to Clinton something, the campaign years.
Hey, thanks to everybody in Portland, Oregon, who came out last week for all those events relating to the new paperback edition of my novel, Not Enough Indians, just out. And it makes a lovely Thanksgiving gift. Now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. Dateline Basra, the chief of police in the southern Iraq city of Basra, has warned of a campaign of violence against women carried out by religious extremists. Some women interviewed by the BBC say they no longer dared venture onto Basra streets without strict Islamic attire. There is a terrible repression against women in Basra, Major General Abdul Jalil Khalaf told the BBC. They kill women, leave a piece of paper on her dresser in indecent clothes so as to justify their horrible crimes. 42 women were killed between July and September this year. The number dropped slightly in October, he said. Major General Khalaf says the police are often too scared to conduct proper investigations into the killings. A woman, a female lawyer in Basra, contacted by the BBC, says attacks on women in the city are occurring every 2 or 3 days. From the Telegraph newspaper in London, America and Israel are secretly drawing up plans to deal with an Iraq that has nuclear weapons. They're preparing for what they've long declared as an unacceptable scenario as the prospects for airstrikes to cripple Iran's nuclear network fade, according to the newspaper. Intelligence chiefs and military planners have given warning that Iran has done better at hiding and dispersing its nuclear facilities than previously assessed, according to the Telegraph. Pentagon strategists are updating U.S. deterrence policies for a future nuclear-armed Iran. Quote, the more they looked at the intelligence and the information they had, the more pessimistic they had become about what could be achieved on the operational front by military action, says Dan Gouray, a Pentagon advisor. Military strikes, he says, might only set the program back a couple of years. The current thinking is, it is just not worth the risks. And in Israel, at a security cabinet meeting, the prime minister told officials to draw proposals for dealing with an Iran that had built nuclear weapons, according to leaks. Finally, an Iraqi Sunni tribal leader who's joined forces with the United States troops to fight al-Qaeda says up to 50 of his men were killed during a U.S. attack after what was apparently a communications mix-up. Haven't been enough of those. The incident is threatening to undermine, this also from the Telegraph, this incident is threatening to undermine the precarious alliance between U.S. forces and Arab sheikhs, heading the, quote, awakening councils that have turned against al-Qaeda, a key part of the surge strategy in Iraq. U.S. officers say they are investigating the reports. News from outside the bubble. From inside the bubble, one more. We're hearing now that the surge is working because violence is going down. This from The Guardian. The British commander in southern Iraq confirms that UK officials have been holding talks with supporters of the Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr's Mahdi army in the hope to draw them into the political process, but that's not the lead. The lead's down here. According to Major General Graham Binns, the security situation in Basra province is improving. Attacks against British and Iraqi forces had fallen by 90% since British troops withdrew from their last base in the center of the city in September. So the unsurge is working too. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin, on Sirius and XM satellite radio networks, whose stockholders have just approved a merger. Good luck with that. Around the world to the internet, on your computer at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it. HarryShearer.com and KCRW.com, available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow, available as a free podcast at KCRW.com. And it would just be like any contribution to the Bernie Kerik Defense Fund not being a gift to Mr. Kerik to be used at his discretion if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you already? Thank you very much, huh? Of course, on the video side, I'll see you this week whenever you want it at mydamnchannel.com. Check out Katie Couric if you haven't yet. Everybody else has. HarryShearer.com is the place to go for the email address that reaches the host of this broadcast directly, as well as for the playlists of the music featured during these broadcasts. HarryShearer.com. A tip of the show chapeau to the San Diego and Pittsburgh desks and to Jenny Lawson here at WWNO-FM New Orleans for helping to make today's program incredibly audible. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world. Think of it as the home of the homeless.